It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. I'm Bill Price. A sneak peek inside CHOP. That is our top story at noon. Newly released video today shows what police officers encountered yesterday when they went into that six-block no-cop zone in Seattle and cleared it out. It was not pretty.
This is outrageous what you see. Nothing less than fascism here. 12 fascism in Seattle, that's what you see.
Over 44 arrests were made as officers worked to clear out the protesters. This man used to own a business in that area, but not anymore.
Let's not forget that less than a month ago, our downtown district was decimated prior to CHOP. And, you know, it was decimated by these fun-loving kids that had nothing else to do. For the business community, there's no sense of returning.
Joey Rodolfo says his business has been destroyed by the protesters, but some have lost much more. Horace Lorenzo Anderson Sr. says his teenage son was shot and killed during the nearly month-long anti-cop protest.
That's my son, you know, and I love him. And that was my son. And
Lorenzo Anderson appearing on Sean Hannity's show last night on Fox News. Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkin once referred to the no-cop zone as the Summer of Love. This week, she was singing a different tune.
From conversations over the weekend, it was clear that many individuals would not leave and that the impacts to the community could not be reduced and public safety could not be improved until they did leave.
The protesters set up shop in Seattle right after the death of George Floyd while in police custody in Minneapolis. The jobs picture getting better in this era of COVID-19. The government reporting today that 4.8 million new jobs created last month.
That is much more than most expected. We thought maybe 3 million. That really lends credence to the fact that the labor market likely bottomed out in April. Job gains in May, job gains in June.
Business analyst Jill Schlesinger, the unemployment rate fell to 11.1%. President Trump praising today's jobs report.
Today's announcement proves that our economy is roaring back. It's coming back extremely strong. We have some areas where we're putting out the flames or the fires, and that's working out well. We're working very closely with governors.
Mr. Trump says the economy shattered all expectations, and today's report proves the country is rebounding from COVID-19. Bankrate.com's Mark Hamrick.
The economy's definitely continuing to heal, but it remains hobbled from the pandemic and the related restrictions.
Hamrick says bars, restaurants, and retail led the surge in hiring last month. A new record set yesterday as the U.S. saw 50,000 cases of COVID-19 in a single day. Vice President Mike Pence pleading with young people.
You hear about the call for common sense, personal hygiene, and the wearing of masks, that this is about protecting our most vulnerable.
In Los Angeles, the city has now introduced a color-coded COVID-19 infection threat level.
Using red, orange, yellow, and green.
Mayor Eric Garcetti, as for the threat level right now.
You're at orange. That means that the risk of infection remains very high.
Orange means residents should stay at home as much as possible. Red, the highest level, could mean mandatory stay-at-home orders in L.A.
It's going to be tough, but, you know, if we need to protect people, the elderly, and I'm all for it.
In New York State, Governor Cuomo says they're doing better than most, but he's not jumping for joy.
New York State is doing great. On the numbers, we're doing great. But I feel that there are storm clouds on the horizon.
California, Texas, Arizona, and Florida all setting new daily COVID-19 records on Wednesday. A stone wall comes down in Richmond. A Confederate monument in what once was the capital of the Confederate State of America. Now no more. Yesterday afternoon, workers took down the statue of General Stonewall Jackson.
Removing these monuments is not a solution to the deeply embedded racial injustices in our city and nation. but as a down payment.
That is Richmond Mayor LeVar Stoney. Election officials in Russia say 78% of voters approved constitutional amendments that will keep Vladimir Putin in power until the year 2036. And the heat is on across the South this 4th of July weekend.
There are excessive heat warnings and heat advisories out for Oklahoma, Texas, Arkansas, and Louisiana, with highs well into the 90s and even some areas hitting the low 100s.
Today's forecaster Jeff Berardelli, the high, hard heat will envelop our neck of the woods, too, this holiday weekend. We'll be flirting with triple digits by Independence Day. Still to come this Thursday, racist graffiti found near Rochester, snitching on face mask violators in New York, and getting ready for racing at the Glen.
This is meteorologist Ken McKinley. A lot of sunshine and some summertime temperatures as we head through this afternoon. More of the same over the next couple of days, with only minimal thunderstorm activity in central and eastern portions of New York and Pennsylvania. Full forecast details are coming your way in about 10 minutes.
Okay, Ken, checking the stories making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania this Thursday, July 2nd. Police in Monroe County, New York, looking for the person or persons who spray-painted racist graffiti on several buildings just outside of the village of Fairport near Rochester. Swastikas and the letters KKK were found. Authorities now reviewing security footage in hopes of finding a suspect. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo wants individuals across the state to report folks who aren't wearing face masks.
Citizen compliance is slipping. That is a fact.
The governor says local governments are supposed to be enforcing the rules, but that's not happening. So he wants people to step in.
Look at any street in Manhattan. I get it. I understand it. Been inside a long time. The weather's warm. I miss my friends. I get why the compliance is slipping. But it is a very real problem.
The governor says young people especially are not following the rules when it comes to state guidelines. A lot of cops, though, say they have more important things to do than police people who aren't wearing a face mask out in public. Onondaga County District Attorney Bill Fitzpatrick.
At some point, common sense has to prevail. I don't want police officers to respond to some guy at Lowe's who's not wearing a mask, but he should not or she should not be served.
Fitzpatrick says the governor's call for community policing will not work and will only create more problems. The reaction pouring in on the face mask mandate in Pennsylvania, folks in the Keystone State now required to wear one anytime they're out in public.
I understand the point of view of it. I get the containment part of it. But man, when I walk out of here, I want to rip this thing off my face.
I know you could sit at the table and you're able to take it off while you're eating. If you go to the bathroom, you need to put it back on. And I mean, we support that.
The mandate requires Pennsylvanians to wear a face mask in public if they cannot socially distance themselves. Pennsylvania Supreme Court has ruled against Republicans in the Keystone State and their bid to end the pandemic shutdown. Here's Senate Majority Leader Jay Corman.
It's ironic that the week that we are going to celebrate the 4th of July and our Independence Day, that the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania has established a king here in the Commonwealth.
Corman says Governor Tom Wolf has abused his power. Fellow Republican Representative Russ Diamond.
The fight was all about us responding to our constituents who were harmed by the governor's shutdown.
Governor Wolf says the disaster declaration is needed for federal aid during the pandemic, and lifting it would not benefit the Commonwealth at all. Yesterday, the state's highest court agreed with Governor Wolf. Tourism officials in western New York say the COVID-19 pandemic will cost them millions of dollars this summer.
We know this is typically the Black Friday of tourism. We wait till Memorial Day to Labor Day to have our Black Friday in this, you know, tourism business. And this year is going to be oddly and uniquely different.
John Percy with Destination Niagara USA says they're trying to salvage the summer tourism season as best they can. Yesterday marked the start of that tourism season in New York under Governor Cuomo's COVID-19 comeback plan. Not a lot of traffic at the airport these days. If you are flying the friendly skies in Buffalo, Officials say you're flying alone.
Right now, the airport's not crowded. Flights, people flying out, were down about 90-85%.
Tim Minkle with the NFTA says the pandemic has emptied the airport in Buffalo. That's hurt their bottom line.
It's been significant. If you take a look at our parking lots, you'll see that there's a lot of space. They're mostly empty. We rely on parking to help support the airport. So in terms of parking, we're getting hit there.
Officials say business is starting to pick up some at the airport, but they're way down from where they were last year at this time. Campsites and cabins across state parks in Pennsylvania seeing an uptick in business during the pandemic. Here's Family Life's Terry Diener.
A spokesman for the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources says camping reservations and state park attendance both are going through the roof. A check of DCNR's camping and lodging reservation system turned up just three of the state's 121 state parks, even with a few sites available for the coming July 4th weekend. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Thank you, Terry. New York State releasing guidelines for the return of professional sports in this era of COVID-19. As of today, those guidelines include no fans. Those guidelines released as part of phase four of Governor Cuomo's reopening plan for the state. Police say scams on the rise during this pandemic.
That's right. Stay-at-home orders and the business closures led to a massive increase in online shopping, which then led to a spike in scammers targeting people during the pandemic. Here's what you should do before making any personal information available. Check out websites before making any purchases. Check the spelling and domain names and Google the website to see if others have been complaining. Make sure the website address begins with HTTPS. The S is important. It stands for secure. Check for an about page and a contact us link, and then check the phone numbers and email addresses to make sure both are legitimate. You can always research a business at BBB.org. That's the Better Business Bureau. And always pay by credit card.
Thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy Miller reporting. First responders reminding folks to leave those fireworks to the pros this 4th of July.
Even the sparklers are real high heat. They would support starting a fire. It's only allowed to be handled by people who are adults, 18 and older. Children should not be handling sparklers, as it gives off enough heat and enough flame that it could injure those children.
Fireworks are illegal in New York. Officials say anything that goes boom, you should probably stay away from. Watkins Glen International now open again for racing in upstate New York. Officials say most of the workers who were furloughed because of the pandemic have now returned back to work. Watkins Glen says it hopes to host some 20,000 fans at the racetrack for NASCAR weekend in mid-August. And the National Comedy Center in Jamestown, New York will reopen tomorrow. Face masks and social distancing will be part of that reopening plan. The Comedy Center will operate at 25% capacity due to COVID. They are getting ready for a return of our national pastime, Sunny Time. 2 minute drill.
Yeah, Bill. Play ball. Baseball diamonds being groomed and dugouts disinfected. Major League Baseball players returning to their home stadiums for spring training 2.0. Practices kick off today for many teams, including the Philadelphia Phillies and new manager Joe Girardi.
Socially distant. Always have your mask on. If people around you, wherever you are, don't have a mask on, you can't be around them. Don't introduce new people into your lives for the next, 90 to 120 days. And I know it's hard because we have families and we want to do that. But if we want to pull this off, there's a big responsibility on them.
Teams who do not begin today will hold their first official workout tomorrow. The regular season is scheduled to start either July 23rd or the 24th. Trailblazers star Damian Lillard is questioning whether NBA players will strictly follow the league's bubble rules for the season restart in Orlando. He says the bubble environment reduces the risk, but he's not confident everyone on all 22 teams will comply.
My confidence ain't great because when we have 100% freedom, everybody don't follow all the rules. So
players start arriving in Florida on Tuesday. If they're able to play the season, should there be an asterisk next to this year's NBA champion? Giannis Antetokounmpo said, no, it's going to be tougher.
At the end of the day, it's going to be the toughest championship you could ever win, because the circumstances are really, really tough right now. So whoever wants it more is going to be able to go out there and take it.
To the gridiron, multiple reports say that the NFL has decided to reduce this year's preseason season from 4 games to 2 amid the uncertainty caused by the pandemic. Weeks 1 and 4 specifically slated to be eliminated, which would place the preseason start August 20th and the conclusion August 30th. The league had already canceled the Hall of Fame exhibition game between the Steelers and Cowboys, set for August 6th in Canton. And for Cornell and the rest of the Ivy League, there will be no fall sports this year. The conference says the decision will be made in a week, but the Post reports fall sports are not expected to be held, and a 7-game football season of conference-only games will be played in the spring, the season usually 10 games. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolfiette.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on this Thursday edition of the Noon Report, a better-than-expected jobs report out today. We'll take a closer look at the numbers, plus a record number of COVID cases in the U.S., and a popular tourist spot reopens tomorrow.
Our culture's narrative is that dads don't matter, but from personal stories and culture-wide data, it's clear they do. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Like so many other basketball junkies who were deprived of March Madness and the NBA playoffs, I devoured ESPN's 10-part series, The Last Dance, which is the definitive account of the NBA's GOAT, Michael Jordan. GOAT, by the way, means greatest of all time. In one area, however, Michael Jordan was just like everyone else. The series dove deeply into his love and devotion for his dad. His dad was the reason for his first retirement. His dad was the reason behind the iconic photo of Jordan heaving tears, hugging a championship trophy after returning to the game the next year. The film also covers the career of Dennis Rodman, perhaps the greatest rebounder in basketball history. Rodman grew up without a father, but he found one after his unlikely journey to the NBA in Chuck Daly, his first coach, when he was with the Detroit Pistons. After being traded to Chicago, Rodman continued to perform well on the court, but without Daly's guidance, he went off the rails off the court. And today, he's less known for basketball than he is for substance abuse, Las Vegas bingers, dating Madonna, getting arrested, wearing a wedding dress, and hanging out with Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. Another series I binged during quarantine was a podcast called Monster, DC Sniper. Back in October of 2002, John Allen Muhammad, who was 41, and Lee Boyd Malvo, who was 17, held Washington, D.C., Northern Virginia, and Maryland hostage with fear during a 3-week random shooting rampage. Now, a key factor behind the entire horrifying saga, at least according to the podcast, is Lee Boyd Malvo's desperate need for a father. Malvo met John Allen Muhammad when he was 13. Muhammad treated him like a son, trusted him, affirming him. Muhammad even introduced Malvo to others as his son. And so, Malvo followed him. And 4 years later, on a shooting spree that would kill at least 11 people in 3 states. A dominant narrative today is that fathers are expendable, except for maybe genetic and financial contribution. Either life goes on just fine without them, or they can easily be replaced by another quote-unquote loving parent. The stories of Michael Jordan, Dennis Rodman, and Lee Boyd Malvo, however, suggest there's a dad-shaped hole in all of us that only dads can fill. Back in 1992, Vice President Dan Quayle was derided for saying as much in response to sitcom character Murphy Brown having a child outside of marriage and without a father involved. Well, the following year, in an article in The Atlantic, Barbara Defoe Whitehead proclaimed Dan Quayle was right. According to a growing body of social scientific evidence, she wrote, children and families disrupted by divorce and out-of-wedlock birth do worse than children in intact families on several measures of well-being. Well, today, nearly 3 decades later, we know that do worse is an understatement. Children in single-parent families are 6 times as likely to be poor. As Chuck Colson would often point out, they're far more likely to be arrested and sent to prison. They're more likely to smoke, to drink alcohol, and abuse drugs in childhood and adulthood. They're more likely to drop out of school. They're far more likely to run away from home, and much more likely to be physically or sexually abused. Again, let me be clear, none of this means children from single-parent homes are doomed to fail. Heroic single parents, grandparents, adopted families, and mentors step in to fill huge gaps left when dads are absent. And yet, when it comes to dads, our culture wants to change the narrative instead of taking all of this data seriously. Taking the data seriously would require sacrificing personal happiness for the sake of children. Taking the data seriously would require not redefining institutions of marriage and family according to our whims. Taking the data seriously would mean rethinking what a life well lived really is. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
20 minutes past the hour. Let's head outside. Weatherman Ken McKinley filling in.
Good afternoon. A very summer-like weather pattern likely to continue on through this afternoon and through the next several days, for that matter, with some very warm temperatures both during the daytime and at night, and a good amount of sunshine for most all areas. Humidity levels will be up over the next few days, so it'll be a bit uncomfortable, but not atypical for this time of the year. As far as thunderstorm activity is concerned, not that much this afternoon. Some central and eastern portions of New York or Pennsylvania could see a stray thunderstorm or two. Perhaps a bit more activity again tomorrow. Again, confined to central and eastern sections as western areas remain fairly dry.
Okay, Ken, if you're just joining us, here are some of the stories we're following for you today, Thursday, July 2nd. President Trump cheering. Today's jobs report.
The United States economy added almost 5 million jobs in the month of June, shattering all expectations. The unemployment rate fell by more than 2 percentage points. Just about 11%.
The president says the country is putting out the flames of COVID-19, and today's report proves it.
This is the largest monthly jobs gain in the history of our country.
During a White House briefing earlier today, the president said the U.S. economy is poised for a record-setting first quarter next year. So, who's hiring?
Leisure and hospitality, that's really bars and restaurants, as well as retail, which had led the way down in job loss, are now helping to lead the way back up.
That is Bankrate.com's Mark Hamrick. Daily COVID cases topping 50,000 yesterday for the first time in these United States.
We were able to bend the curve in the state of California. We're going to bend this curve again.
California Governor Gavin Newsom says he's shutting down indoor service at bars, restaurants, and movie theaters in the most populous counties in the Golden State.
They should have never reopened knowing that there's still a pandemic going on.
Texas and Arizona also setting single-day records for COVID-19 yesterday.
What are you seeing in the emergency room right now?
We are really overwhelmed right now in the emergency department. It's very busy right now. It's just extremely, extremely full of patients that are very sick from COVID-19.
Houston emergency room nurse Jen Blocker says she's seeing an increase in minorities coming into the hospital. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says he is frustrated with compliance issues with regards to face masks and social distancing. The governor now says maybe citizens should be the ones to enforce the rules. Family Life's Jeremy Miller.
Yeah, the governor's asking local governments and law enforcement to enforce mask wearing. He said he's even seen people enforce the rule themselves by telling others to put on a mask or get away. Law enforcement officials say police have bigger issues to deal with right now than to remove someone from a store for non-compliance with mask wearing. They suggest business owners establish and enforce their own policies about health precautions. Jeremy Miller, Family Life News.
The world's richest man still on top. The Bloomberg Billionaires Index puts Amazon's Jeff Bezos at $171 billion. His net worth higher than what it was 2 years ago when Bezos only pulled in $168 billion. And the hit Broadway musical Hamilton arrives on Disney Plus tomorrow.
This is Hamilton.
Award-winning musical that tells the story of Alexander Hamilton was supposed to hit movie theaters next year, but with the coronavirus pandemic shutting down theaters, that Broadway show will be streamed starting tomorrow on Disney Plus. Coming up on 25 minutes past the hour, Thursday afternoon, you're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life.
This is Faith Under Fire. Each Thursday on Family Life, we give voice to religious battlegrounds in this nation. I'm your host, Tracy Lynn. With us today, Jeremy Dice, special counsel with First Liberty Institute. Jeremy, public areas have long been places where we can connect with others in our community. We recently learned that a woman named Gail Blair had conversations about her faith in a town park in Westerly, Rhode Island. Would you explain what ended up happening to Gail?
Yeah, to fully appreciate the story, Gail went blind at about the age of 37. She's now 66, I think. And before she went blind through kind of a rare condition, she was a charge nurse. She worked at Johns Hopkins Hospital, for instance, and just did a lot of great work doing that kind of thing. But she has always been deeply in love with her Savior. And so when she went blind, she turned her attention to the things that she could do. And one of those things was she could actually walk from her apartment to what's called Wilcox Park. Now, Wilcox Park is in Westerly, Rhode Island. It's connected to the public library there. And it's one of these kind of old gardens that are kind of manicured and you know, part of these small picturesque town squares around the country. She would walk there by herself, and she'd sit on a park bench and engage those who she heard coming by her in conversation. She would stop them if she could. If they didn't want to talk, then she would just part company with them amicably, hand them a copy of the Gospel of John from the tract society that she belonged to, and that was it. And if she had conversations, she would always give out one of these copies of the Gospel of John. Well, the library that operates the park became upset that other people that she'd given these copies of the Gospel of John to were throwing them on the ground, and they blamed Gail for it. So eventually it came to a head where the library officials actually called the police on Gail and had her ticketed for trespass, which means that if she were to come back into that park anytime within 2 years' time, she would be sent to jail for violating the rules of trespass. And so Gail has been basically stuck at her home, unable to go to the one independent thing she could do still and pass out and have these great conversations about Jesus with other people on a park bench, which sounds like something we really need right now. So that's kind of what's happening with Gail.
Thank you for coming to her defense. What has First Liberty requested from the Memorial and Library Association there in Westerly, Rhode Island?
We believe, like I'm sure many of you do, that no one should be kicked out of a park for talking about their faith or having conversations with others about Jesus. That should be pretty obvious to everybody. But what we did is to say, look, the library and the park here, they're at least places of public accommodation. And as places of public accommodation in the state of Rhode Island, they cannot discriminate on the basis of a number of things, including disability and religion. And for the library to kick her out and to, in fact, arrest her or at least give her a ticket and threaten her with arrest if she comes back, well, that's pretty clear discrimination on the basis of both disability and religion. And it's really a shame, too, that we've had to actually make this complaint to the State Human Rights Commission there in Rhode Island, because, Gail, one of the other things she'd like to be able to do is take her grandchildren to the library and have them go to story time and things like that. She can't do that anymore because the kids will get a lesson on, you know, the police taking grandma away to prison for daring to walk into an otherwise public park.
So what's the next step in this case, Jeremy?
Well, hopefully the Rhode Island Commission on Human Rights will take a very serious look at this issue and evaluate the entire thing, do a thorough investigation. And my hope is that they remind the library and the park there that they can't kick people out for simply talking about Jesus with other people in their park. I mean, after all, she's handing out books, which I think is something that the library kind of likes, people reading. And oddly enough, they want to keep her from doing that very thing. And the other sad thing we discovered here is that we did a little research on this and discovered that Gail's the only one to receive this penalty from the police department. No one else has been cited for a trespass, or no cited person has been stopped from having conversations in the park or handing out literature in the park. It's only Gail that has been targeted for this. There are weddings that occur there for people handing out, you know, programs to the weddings. There are plays that occur in that park and people hand out handbills and a number of other things like that. She just now feels like the Library Association is like standing on a watchtower just waiting for her to trespass so they can cart her off to jail for daring to step foot on their property anymore. That just is completely outrageous and wrong. And I would think that the library would want to fix this thing really quick.
Yeah, she could use some encouragement these days. Thank you for upholding the rights of people as you fight for religious freedom. Jeremy, where can our listeners learn more about this case?
I'd encourage folks to go to firstliberty.org, and you can read the letter we sent to the Human Rights Commission there in Rhode Island and all about Gail's case.
That's Jeremy Dice with First Liberty. I'm Tracy Lynn, Family Life News.
Thank you, Tracy. Faith Under Fire comes your way every Thursday during the Noon Report. You can also find it online anytime at fln.org/podcast.
Good afternoon. A very summer-like weather pattern likely to continue on through this afternoon and through the next several days, for that matter, with some very warm temperatures both during the daytime and at night, and a good amount of sunshine for most all areas. Humidity levels will be up over the next few days, so it'll be a bit uncomfortable, but not atypical for this time of the year. As far as thunderstorm activity is concerned, not that much this afternoon. Some central and eastern portions of New York or Pennsylvania could see a stray thunderstorm or two. Perhaps a bit more activity again tomorrow. Again, confined to central and eastern sections as western areas remain fairly dry.
All righty, Ken McKinley, appreciate it. Finally at noontime, Hershey Park opens to the public tomorrow. Family Life's Brandon Dixon has more on what you can expect to see.
Yeah, Bill, a brand new entrance and a brand new roller coaster. Just some of what's in store at the new and approved Hershey Park. Chocolate Town USA is a new feature at the park and will feature Candemonium, the tallest, fastest, longest, and sweetest coaster at Hershey. Guests over the age of 2 will be required to wear a face mask, and temperatures will be taken before you can enter the park. There'll be new signage helping you with the social distancing thing, and hand sanitizing stations will be located throughout the park. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Slowly getting back to normal. Thank you, Brandon, and that is the world we live in this Thursday. As always, thanks for joining us. I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.